Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm the man. I'm the man. I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all you stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake? I'm a soldier standing on my feet. No surrender and I won't retreat. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail. Turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell.
Good afternoon, good evening. Or good morning, whenever you're listening to this, either live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can send us questions, comments, or suggestions at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2B. Psych, P-S-Y-C-H, B2Bpsych at gmail.com. We'd like to thank those who continue to support the show, who continue to write, who continue to ask us questions that they want to see us discuss. As we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, perspectives, or ideas that you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University or WMUL, by any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors, but these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, as bad as this sounds, take this advice at your own risk. And while this may be therapeutic, this is not what, Dr. Chapman?
You hope that you get assistance if you need assistance, but don't use this as your sole form of therapy.
Exactly, exactly. So again, we are here. We took a little break last week, and we are back. We got questions about infidelity, cheating, and more specifically men in cheating in relationships. So what we thought would turn into maybe half a segment of a show has evolved into a three-part series. So today we are part three on relationships. The destruction of relationships, cheating, and today we will talk about signs of cheating, when you catch the cheater, and most importantly, should I stay or should I go? And what are the things that, you know, couples together, what are the things that individuals as well as couples together should try to figure out when infidelity has taken place in a relationship? What are some of the things that they should take stock of when they try to figure out if they should continue and should move forward and go on with the relationship? And so again, we'll break down and talk about a lot of those different things. But before we start, how are you, sir? How is sunny California?
Good. It's finally starting to feel like spring for us, so that's good.
Okay, okay. Even though it usually feels like spring year round, but we got you.
I knew you were going to say that. No. I mean, that's what it's like. No, we're not getting snow. We're not having to worry about salt on our cars and stuff. But it is. It's a bit chilly. You know, not West Virginia or Michigan chilly, but it's a bit chilly. And now that chill has stopped, so it's nice.
I understand. Well, we are warming up ourselves. Now, today it got a little cold. You know, the weather acts like it don't know what it want to do, but things are coming back around. Things are getting warm. People are getting their shots, still wearing their masks. I'm so proud of my West Virginians. We're doing well. We're doing what we can. So yeah. Things are opening up. Things are slowly getting back to normal. So you can see people's disposition and mood pick up a little bit. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to see people. I'm seeing people smile a little bit more than before, and I think the sun will do that to you, the warm weather will do that to you, and like I said, things are slowly opening back up again. You know, winter sports started, so there's basketball, there's wrestling now, so things are good. Everything's good in the hood. Everything's all right.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing I will say, at least the way it has been the last couple of days, that's a little bit different than the Midwest, is that for whatever reason, what comes to mind is summertime. I know it's just spring, but it feels like when you go outside, you know, it's starting to feel and look, you know, the way people are dressing, like it's summertime over here. So, yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, well, let's rock and roll. So, again, we are on our third week, this third part. Now, I absolutely, positively did not know that this topic, it would resonate with people the way that it has, and that it would evolve into three parts. But I think that that's a good thing. I think that as we talk about these issues and then we disperse and people have stuff to say and they ask us questions, you know, that's a good thing. So I'm glad that we're touching on topics that people want to hear and that's resonating with them on some level. So, again, although I did catch, not necessarily flack, but a comment that I made week before last, the last time we talked about this. And I said that when infidelity happens, it was during our masculinity conversation, which lets me know that we probably should have something on masculinity. And I said stereotypically when something happens, women wonder, do you love her? And men are obsessed with the idea that someone has been with their woman. And there is a hint of masculinity that is wrapped in all of that, just infidelity in general. And somebody asked me why, and I don't think that we can answer that now, but that's probably, again, that speaks to masculinity in men, though. Is it that because the question was, is it that men don't care? Like it's not a love thing. Your ego just hurt. And I think that there is a love thing, but there's also a bit of masculinity that's wrapped into that also. It's the idea that some other man may have been more man than me. That is something that, and obviously I'm not a woman, so, but I don't, there may be an element of that for women as well. I don't know. But just speaking from a male perspective.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if when that question was being asked, were they asking it from the perspective of if the male's been cheated on or if the male does the cheating?
If he's been cheated on. If a man has been cheated, it was a woman that asked me. If a man has been cheated on, why is it that the first thing that doesn't come to a man's mind is love? And why is this element of masculinity so present for men? And again, that's a masculinity conversation. And it's interesting because I think that the way men define being a man is being able to please the woman in their life. So there are all these identity, you know what I'm saying? Like, and again, I'm not saying that women don't think about these things or have these issues, just strictly speaking from a male perspective. And that could just be a stereotype that women wonder if you love her. And men are like, I can't believe like some other dude or some other guy was with my woman. And I wonder if he was more man than me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pondering that question. I think, at least based on some of the research I've seen, part of it, it's not necessarily just that. It's that males are going to be more focused on, well, sex is what makes an affair an affair. Though that's changing, it's changed to be, there's more acceptance of emotional components. But for women, it's more likely to be the emotional components. Now, and the way that they shape and turn out depending on who the person is. So let's say, you know, a female starts to talk to Joey at work and she starts to just devote some more emotional stuff. That wouldn't be outside of the norm for women to do because they usually are having deeper emotional conversations with other women. Yeah. So it wouldn't be far of a leap to have this conversation with Joe, but then to Joe, who after emotional connections are formed with her, is more likely to only form those connections with somebody he's sexually attracted to. So it'd be more likely to be like, okay, well, this should develop into something sexual. So the way that both of those would be looking at those situations and how they evolve into an affair would be different anyways. And the emphasis on love or just sex is different because I think, and I'm not saying this is not just specifically for men or women, I'm just talking about the research I've seen, but if you start out with the focus of the emotional part is more important as opposed to the sexual part, and there's a difference already there, then that's gonna affect the impact an affair has on you and the questions you ask.
Good. I agree. And again, it's hard for me to talk about that, like I said, without delving into masculinity, what masculinity means to men, how a larger part of relationship satisfaction for men is feeling like a man and masculinity in relationship. Like that gets super, super convoluted and super, super deep. So I probably shouldn't even brought it up because I knew it was going to spiral out and it was going to spiral into something else. But quickly before we start, can a man have affairs and have sex with other women and it mean nothing? Yes or no? That was another question that I was asked to ask on today's show as well. Just briefly, yes or no?
Just briefly, why?
Well, I mean, go into it however you feel you need to. But
I would say yes. And I think that this can happen with some women. Also, I think that
is it more likely to happen with men than women?
It's more likely to happen with men, sure. But I think that that's because of the different emotional balance, the release of those different emotions or sexual chemicals get released that are bonding chemicals when you have intercourse. And I think that really to a lot of women is like, well, how can it mean nothing? Like that's so you just bang people and don't mean nothing. Like to me, if we're having this intimate relationship where, you know, you'll see like probably even early on in different parts of dating, women will use the word we were intimate. And guys would be like, we just had sex, we banged, like whatever. You know, so there's this whole different like package and language. Yes, I agree for that's going to be most likely to happen with men, though I do think it does happen with some women.
Yeah. I think it's complicated. And I said this once before, and I don't think too many people aren't digging my theory, but I think anatomically, I wonder if anatomically it matters. Penetrator versus being penetrated. I wonder if there's a different level of vulnerability that is the catalyst for emotion, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
no, I think if you look at some of the different evolutionary psychological perspectives on that, you would see some probably language about that.
Yeah. So I think it matters. And then I also think that it matters that, you know, well, it's complicated. That's another topic for another show for another day. But those are two things that somebody asked me to, if I think about it, to just sort of bring it up. So moving on and moving forward. So today's show, should I stay or should I go?
So should I stay or should I go?
You have caught your partner cheating. Now what? What are the major barriers? Typically, what do you see when infidelity happens? what percentage of those for those that try to work on their relationships, and this is part of how you make your bread. Every time you see somebody that cheat, that's a dollar in your pocket, because that's a so I my apologies, I don't mean to make light of it, but I'm just saying, you know. So the question is, maybe just in general, not speaking specifically about anybody that you practice with, how many of those relationships make it after somebody has stepped outside of their relationship? Like, does therapy help? Does it not help? What are some of the major issues that you hear that play a part in what makes it so hard to get over this betrayal?
Okay, I'm gonna give you some anecdotal and some of the research I know, and then I just want to come back to a casual conversation about should it be done before we come back to it. But I'll start with in my own practice. So I mainly see couples. That's, I don't know, probably 90% of the people I work with are couples. Oh, okay. And I would say out of that 90%, at least half of that have experienced infidelity in some shape, form, or fashion. And all of the couples that I'm currently or have worked with, I can't think of one that I've worked with for a long period of time that has decided that just ended. That's not counting the ones that come in and only have one session and then they just, you know, don't work. Now, that's a small chunk or sample. I would tell you there are different things that affect it. You know, it depends on what I tend to see more of are couples that have been together for long periods of time and experience it. That's probably already a variable. If you've been together, you got kids and you experience it, it's easier. Not that it's ever easy, but it's easier to withstand it if you have a number of years behind you than if you're earlier in the relationship.
Because you don't want your time to have been a waste.
Yeah, well, there's this book, I think I mentioned before, Not Just Friends, and that book by Shirley Glass, still the book is kind of dated. It still has lots of solid information. And one thing she talks about is the vulnerable points for newer relationships and how unlikely it is if you experience this kind of thing in a newer relationship for you to survive it. And it's not just because of the infidelity. It's because one starts to think, well, was this whole relationship a facade? Did this mean we weren't equally matched? There's all of these things that a longer term relationship might be able to excuse in some regard to, like, maybe we were a match and there's these other components. But I think there are lots of variables to be considered when it happens, what's going on in terms of the phase in the relationship, because there's lots of vulnerability points that maybe we'll get to that I think make a relationship, not just whether it's male or female, a relationship more vulnerable to affairs. And then I think the other thing when it comes to therapy, you asked me about therapy works or not. I think it's good for people to know what the research bears is that, okay, it doesn't sound good, but couples that go to individual therapy, let's say they are not going to a couple therapists and they're going to individual therapists, they're more likely to end their relationship. And I think part of the theory behind that is they're going to that individual session, just working on what's going on with them. It's only really one side of the complex situation that is a couple. And they're more likely to just cater to that and not the relationship. And that's probably one reason that contributes to the relationship ending. It's not like therapy ends it, but if you're really just working on you, the other person's not there, then those that go to couples instead of individual have a better chance. I don't have a number for how significant that is, but there is a bigger difference. And then the one that's better than just individual would be individual and couples, if you're gonna use it. I would say if you're gonna go to therapy, you would wanna expect that it's not gonna be a magic pill, because there's the affair, and then there's other things that might be going on in the relationship. That affairs happen for a lot of reasons. So it's not necessarily just that the vulnerabilities in the relationship created the affair, but there are other things that might be going on in that relationship after the affair is dealt with, if it's dealt with, because sometimes they take a long time to deal with.
How much of, I'm interested in that idea of these types of events are harder to survive earlier on in a relationship. And I've always talked about this idea of investment. What do you think about the idea of investment? That the longer you're in a relationship, the more you invest, And the longer you invest, the more you invest, the harder it is to leave, because you've spent so, like, the longer you're there, you've spent so much into the relationship. Again, you don't want your time, your effort, your energy, your finances, you don't want it to all have been a waste. I've always made this assertion that a lot of people out here who believe they're in love, they're really not in love. You've just invested so much, you fooled yourself into believing that you love this person when you really don't. And I think that investments can fool you. And our investments will fool us and make us believe we love people we don't. And I wonder if those same investments, the longer we're with someone, the more we invest, the harder it is to leave, because we got kids, I spent money, I've given myself mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically to this person. Like, how much of all of that do you think plays into staying? It's not just into staying, because it's not, you know, because it's not just the longer we're in the relationship. And tell me if I heard you correctly. It's like, the longer I'm in a relationship, I see all these good and bad points. So it's hard for me to believe that the relationship was a sham, because I know I've seen all of these good points that we've had. It wasn't completely a lie or a sham. Something just happened. Whereas if it happens early on in a relationship, you just believe it was just all a lie. It probably was all just a lie. But the longer you're with someone, so I'm saying it's more than that. It's also somewhere internally we're thinking about, either subconsciously, all of the things that we've invested into these people, into this situation, and we don't want to let those things go or have been a waste. Does that make sense?
All right, well, let me answer that in two parts. Okay, so the first part is going to be addressing that investment question, and then the other part is speaking to time in the relationship that's besides just investment. I don't think it's uncommon for people that have, if they've been honest with themselves, or they know friends that have done this, that maybe right before the wedding or moving in with somebody, they got all kinds of red flags, and they're like, you know what? I don't know if I should really do this, but let's just say in the case of the wedding, but we already sent out the save the dates, people are coming, we already got the venue, my parents know about it, their parents know about it. In order to save face, we're gonna just have to go ahead and go through with this, even though you have bigger red flags and it's not just cold feet. In order to not embarrass yourself or your family, you go through with it. I think in some ways, that's what you're speaking to over the longer course of time. Someone's been together, they have these things, they have kids, they have a house together, they have all these things, and don't wanna risk that. I definitely think that that does happen. And sometimes that makes it hard for people to leave a relationship, whether there's been an affair or not. Sometimes people triangle other things in. We've been just talking about affairs, but you could have, triangle would be a third party that's in your relationship that doesn't have to be a person. It could be work, could be alcohol, could be sex, it could be a bunch of other things. And sometimes things get triangled in for lots of reasons that might have nothing to do with the relationship, but sometimes they do have something to do with the relationship. Sometimes it's, well, I don't really feel fulfilled in this relationship, so I triangle this in so I can get with it and be okay. But throughout the course of time, after accumulating all this stuff, kids, house, job, reputation, trying to look like the Joneses, then it doesn't seem like it would be a good idea, even if someone were to cheat. And I also imagine that if we were to have a poll, it would be cool if we could have had like a live poll. I imagine some people would stay with somebody who's cheated. And part of their reason might be either dedication to the idea of marriage, or that's just one thing that can be gotten over, or whatever the philosophical reasons behind it. So yes, I agree. But on top of that, on the other side of that, I don't think it's always just about that. I think that sometimes because even though couples have been together longer, they have according to some of the research that I've seen, a better ability to sustain certain affairs. That doesn't mean couples that have been together for a longer period of time don't divorce. They do and still have a significant number. But I think for the cases where the couples are able to work it out, as opposed to the younger couples, is because they can see the totality of the person and they got to see that in context of years. So that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I can, and that's what I was trying to articulate when I was like, You know, you've been together and you've seen good spots and bad spots. And to some degree, you've learned parts and pieces of this person that you know aren't all bad. And that's a little bit harder when you haven't been together for a long period of time. It just all feels like it was all a sham or was all a lie. Yeah. Especially if you're doing something like that that early in a relationship.
Yeah.
So, so now what? Signs of a cheater.
Before we go into more of the therapy stuff, I wanted to hear, like, what do you think, right? What does Dr. Hinton say if someone's like, "What do you think, man?" You know, I know you don't tell people to stay in a relationship or leave their relationship, but they caught someone cheating. Should they stay or should they go?
It's situational for me. It's never what I have found. Is that people, like I said, people can get over sex, but they can't get over being lied to. Over and over again, to me, when people have issues, the issues that people have with infidelity and getting over infidelity is not the sex, it's the lie. It's the sex, a lot of times, it's the sex for men. More, and again, these are my personal experiences. It is the lie, but it's also... it's an ego and a pride thing for men. And they keep running over the image over and over and over of their partner being with someone else. And I know women do that as well. But it's the lie. And I tell, like, it takes time. It takes time to heal. And, like, what do they say about trust? It's the hardest thing to build and the easiest thing to lose. And... at some point, can you move forward? Are you going to continue to throw this up in this person's face a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, 5 years later? And I'm not saying there's a time limit, because I don't, but when it comes to pain and when it comes to trauma, I don't think that anybody has a right to tell you how long you should be hurt in any situation, no matter what the situation is. That's me personally. But if we 5 years into this and you still bringing up the infidelity, I'm like, if you can't let it go, is that a sign? You know, that is a hard situation to function in. And those are the things that I tell people that they have to, as they move forward, they're going to be bitter. They're going to be mad. They're going to be upset. They're going to go through a wide range. But I think the key is learning how to build trust. So then the thing is, how do we build trust? I said, it's not rocket science. Be consistent. Be what you said you're going to be and do what you said you're going to do. It's not hard. Like, trust... to me, trust, it's easier to trust someone who's consistent. So often, there's an inconsistency in what we say and what we do. There's an inconsistency in our face and what we say. How you do? Is anything wrong? No, I'm fine. You say no, but your face says something else. So it's not, obviously, that's not the only way to be consistent. But, you know, building, I think couples have to figure out how to build trust. You know what I'm saying? Because ultimately, that is the issue. Every time you walk out of that door, I'm gonna wonder, are you going where you really said you're going?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, trust is essential. I think that the difficult thing about trust is not just the affair. There's a good book about it by Gottman. It's called The Science of Trust. For those of you that are not, like, in a lot of technical terms, there'll be parts that you won't want to read, but there's parts you can skim through and get to the good stuff. He mentions a lot of different things that I think need to be considered. So, okay, so there's what happens with the affair. Like, in any relationship, we're asking some basic questions. Can I depend on you to consider me in your decisions? Can I depend on you to be honest with me in what you do? Can I depend on you to be on my side on these things? And all these things are tested in little and big exchanges. You know, you get in a little argument with your in-law. Is your partner on your side with you on that? That's one thing. But the other thing that goes with it is whatever that person's history is, the individual history that you have before the affair, of how easy it is for you to trust. For some people, that's easy to do. Some other people, it's hard. And even if it was easy for you to do prior to the affair, person was consistent until they weren't consistent. And even if they be consistent for a period of time, you can remember when they weren't. I think one of the things that couples face is such a challenge. You talked about that, you know, 5 years, 6 years, you're still holding on to it. That's something that I see. It's because for the person, like you mentioned with, you said, talking about the guys feeling like that with sex, that happens to both. And it's basically like, it's intrusive thoughts about it. It's not like that partner wants to be thinking about this person sleeping or doing something with the other thing. And there'll be random triggers for that person, like a date or a time or something where that thing will get in their mind and start to become a problem. And it'll be really hard for them to regulate their emotions sometimes around it. So one thing they'll try to do to reconstruct the trauma, like we talked about before, is to get clarification about the story, which will seem very annoying to the partner who's already told the story, if they've told the whole story, because sometimes they haven't, because they're trying to protect, they haven't really told the whole story.
Exactly.
And then when they do tell the story, they tell other parts they left out, and that's re-traumatized and starts it all over again. And the partner who has to do all this over again, the one who's did the betraying, the one who committed the affair, gets frustrated because they're like, they think every time we talk about this just unwinds it. But the reality is that partner is trying to build trust, but they're also trying to open a window with you. They're talking to you about it because you're the person they would talk to about stuff, and now they got to talk to you about this, and they want to connect with you about it, but they can't because certain things get in the way. Like when they start talking about it, you say, "That again? Look, that was a year ago. Are you gonna get over that, or are we gonna be done?" And it's, you know, you got kids or people that are now adults that have experienced some other form of life-altering event. You guys can call it trauma. That is still experiencing it 20 years later. It's the same thing for someone who experiences an affair.
Yeah. I think it matters. I think one of the things that's probably most important about infidelity is, what was the situation? Was this, we was on a break? We was going through a bad time? We was both emotional? Our relationship was on the rock? Is this somebody I was talking to, it just happened? Or am I just somebody out here, just in these streets, just got woman after woman after woman, a man after man after man? And, or was this just, hey, me and the boys went to the massage parlor and, or whatever. Right. You know, are these, is this somebody I have no connection to, I'm paying for sex? Like, I think all of those things matter. And I think for all parties, I think it probably is harder when it's a situation that you can have a connection with somebody. We was, you know, it's different if it's just, I was mad at you, I was at the bars, a one night stand, it's somebody I'll never see again. As opposed to we was having problems and I was talking to Lucy at work, I was talking to Jared at work, and I don't know Lucy or Jared, just to be clear. Those are just random names for anyone listening. And I formed a connection with this person. And we went to lunch, and he would go buy me Starbucks. Like, I think those types of things complicate and make getting over it a little bit harder. If this was just some one-night random thing, or, you know, or it was, you know what I mean? Like, I think that those things are maybe a little bit easier to get. None of it is easy.
Right.
But if we had to scale all of this, that would be a little bit easier. So when you ask me, like, what I tell people, like, it matters how it happens. It matters what the situation was. Was I coming home and lying to you, saying I was going to the gym when I was going on dates with somebody? You know what I mean? Like, those are the kind of things that, was you telling this person about my kid? You were talking to our kids about this person? Like, that kind of stuff. As opposed to, went to the bar, met somebody, and it happened, is what it was. It wasn't nothing. You know what I mean? That's messed up too. I'm not saying it's a better or worse, to be clear, for anyone that may hear this or listening to this. I'm saying I think it's different. I think the situation matters. And it matters if there was intimacy involved with the sex. Those are the things that I think are so much harder to get over. And then the lies. You came home and looked at me and lied and said you was going X and you wasn't. So I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think it, again, couples can get over the sex. It's the lie. It's always the lie. And it's
okay. I guess what I would say, and people are probably going to, I don't know how they're going to think about what I'm about to say, but I think it would be, if you've made the decision it's one thing to have to sit down and make a decision about whether you're going to stay in the relationship or not. And some, maybe you're going to decide, you know, it was too much for me. It's not something I can actually get over with, over, and I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. And then you go ahead and decide to get out. Okay. But then for a person who decides, or a couple that decides, you know what, we're going to stay in this relationship. We're going to try to work it out. For the person who has been betrayed, I think that one thing that it just might be something for you to ponder is, everybody lies. Now, that's not me excusing whatever lie this person then told you. I'm just, look, you know what I'm saying? When you wear that,
that don't make it better.
Whatever, or you get that particular haircut that you really like, and this could be any gender, and then you ask your special person, like, what do you think about this? And it's something you're excited about. They may or may not be honest with you, depending on what they think it's going to do to your feelings. That's just, you know, part of it, right? Sometimes people do it for different reasons. That's not excusing. I'm just letting you know that your person has lied to you. Like, don't be surprised about that. That's just, it has happened, okay? So as long as you can start there. And then the other thing is, the questions become, there are questions I think that need to be answered, but then there are questions that we can probably answer for you right now. One of the questions is, that I hear is asked to the person is, were you thinking about me when this happened? No, they were not. It's just like, that's the answer. Like, you know, I mean, just to be blunt with it, no, they were not, because most of the time when people are with their affair person, the percentage of time they're thinking about you is minimal compared to the opposite way, actually.
Are there some questions that shouldn't be asked? Or should everything be asked?
Okay, I think it depends on the dynamic of the relationship. You know, you have some people that really, you know, are going to go before they go see a doctor. They're going to look up everything from the symptom. They're going to want to know when they go see the doctor, like, but it says this and Google said that. And so MD doc says this. Okay. So that person, maybe they need to ask all the questions because that's just how their mind works. But I think in general, most couples should be aware that certain questions, I say couples, but I really mean the person who's been betrayed. Certain questions are not going to be good for your psyche. So probably not going to be good for you to ask about what types of positions, how many times those things, you might want to ask how many times it happened, but the specific details of it are gonna feed your intrusive thoughts. But there's a way you can test it out. If you're not really sure, like, what questions to ask, ask a few and then see what happens to your psyche. If it's something that's really destructive and not helpful, then you probably should avoid those questions. But there are questions that needs to be asked. I think it's important for the person who did the unfaithful act to recognize that person will need to ask questions, and they may need to ask questions for years. They may need to ask the same question over and over again because they're trying to restory this life-changing event.
How often, check me out, how often do we ask questions because we want the other person to lie to us to give us a reason to stay? Think about that. Don't answer yet. Just think about it. And then I want you to respond. How often you have hurt me so deeply. I want to leave because I know I'll look like a fool for staying. So I need you to make me feel better about this situation, so I will. So I ask you questions to make you lie to me so I can feel better about it. How many times do you really, you want me to say it only happened twice because you really don't want to know it was every weekend. But if I tell you twice, you want to believe. And that's what I find interesting about infidelity, particularly when we love someone. We want to believe them. There are people listening right now. They know that their partner's cheating on them. As I always say, you know who you laying with. Real quick, station identification. I know this is a really weird spot. Station identification, this is Marshall University. WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. This is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Henson. And we are on our third part of our infidelity series. Moving forward. Does that make sense? Why do people make them like, you want me to lie to you because you really want to stay?
Let me answer that. My opinion on that question, based on what I've seen, I think that's totally plausible. I mean, I think outside of couples, in general, a lot of times when people ask for advice or what you think I should do, I think they're searching for you to tell them what they think they should do already. And that's why they get so salty when you tell them some other thing to do. But outside of that, what I have experienced is that these questions a lot of times are asked out of anger and hurt. And sometimes they're not really a question. They're a question wrapped in some form of accusation, actually. They're like, how could you do this to me? Or, so it was only three times? Like, as if there's a real expectation that there's more than that. And the question is sort of what is called a truth trap. So the partner has some idea, whether they know the truth or not, about what they think the answer is. And they ask a question just to see if you're gonna give them the right answer, the honest answer. And when you don't, then they have more reason to make you the villain. That's what I've experienced more so than the other. I'm not saying the other doesn't exist, but a lot of times the partner is very hurt and like can't really ask a question that's not, because I don't find those questions helpful. Can't really ask a question that's not loaded.
So it's a trap. Am I trying to make you lie to me so I can leave? It's funny because I've experienced the opposite. Someone really cares about the other person and they're hurt, but they love them and they don't want to leave. And it's partly because they probably blame themselves. They've either been gaslighted or they've been blamed for the situation in some way, shape, form, or fashion. The person has been like, if you would have been doing X, if you would have been doing Y, or you know I was having a, like, so they start to feel partly to blame. I've seen and I've found those people are far more likely to just want to hear, to want to know, they know it happened, but want to feel like it wasn't as bad as what it really was, to give them justification to stay.
Oh, I mean,
I find that a lot.
Right. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. I'm just saying with my experience with clients, with individuals or friends, it might've been a little different, but with clients, I've experienced this the most. And maybe that's because people come to see me about this particular issue and a good percentage just affairs. But I'll say when I see the opposite, so when I see the partner who's been betrayed, who doesn't really want to deal with the affair or wants just everything to be okay, then they'll skip the question part. Because of the way that I have it structured is there's an opportunity for questions to be asked in order to fuel out the cancer that's going to exist if they're not asked. And those situations when they have an opportunity to ask, oh, I don't have any questions about it. Like, you know, like, oh, we've resolved it. You know, so it sort of goes to yours, except for they won't even ask any questions. It's just, okay, we know it happened, and that's it.
So does that mean ignorance is bliss? Is that what you mean? Is it that they'd rather not know, so I won't have to deal with it and think about it, and I'll just, and how does that work?
Okay.
Because eventually I think that dam cracks and water.
So
yeah.
I think that also depends on the individual and the couple, because sometimes that reaction, though it might be just a defensive reaction, is actually a symptom of the vulnerability of the relationship. Because if the couple never really was able to deal with issues, that's a vulnerability that could lead to some outside force, whether it's an affair or something else. And how you see those couples are, we never argue, man, we get along. Everything is peachy between he and I, and we don't understand other people that argue. And then if you ask them about their family line, you might hear one or two opposites. You might hear a family line where they argue too much and that's why they avoid it, or one where it was the same. Like, I've never seen my parents disagree.
Wow. So now, we got 15 left. What do we tell these couples? How do you get through this? How do we tell the man who loves his wife or his partner, but I just can't stop?
But just can't stop the affair?
I just can't stop cheating.
Oh,
because okay. Every time he gets caught, it's like always chooses the family over the affair, or the side person, but I just can't stop. What do we, not just men, what do we tell that person quickly?
That's two different questions. So, look, I don't know. I think I tell the last person, the one who has the, I don't want to call it a problem. But it's something that's definitely going to be interfering with his relationships ongoing, that, you know, he might need to seek some help with that particular thing. Is it all about sex? Is that some type of sexual addiction, or is that something he's doing to fulfill some other loss that's there? It might be some type of trauma or life connecting issue that he needs to go back and kind of resolve. That one will be a harder thing to deal with.
That's not a couples therapy thing, though, is it? That's an individual thing, right? Like, I know people like that, and what I think in my head is, what are you chasing? You're chasing, to some degree, I wonder if they're chasing something. They're trying to fill some void or some hole. Right. Like we talked about before, that sexual behavior can be, and I heard Dr. Welsing say this before, Dr. Francis Chris Welsing, sexual behavior can be a manifestation of like what's going on inside of you internally, the way you behave sexually. You know, right. It's not always about sex. You're chasing something. You're missing something. You're trying to fill some void. So people who are serial, you know, who do it in a serial fashion, they truly love their families. Some of them truly love their families and love their wives and love their husbands and love their partners. But maybe that's a symptom of something that's going on inside.
Okay, well, I would say for that, I mean, that's complicated. I think, though, if they want the relationship to work, there should definitely be couples relationship, couples therapy. If they do individual in addition to that, that's fine. But I want to come back also to the situations, because I think the situation with the habitual cheater is unique, as opposed to the one who just cheated. And I think that question is different. So if we're saying, like, what do you want to do? You want to decide you want to stay in the relationship? And in this case, I'm talking to the person who's been betrayed. Then it's a conversation that you need to have with yourself and then maybe with your partner and think about the journey ahead. So the journey ahead is a recovery journey. If you're really in a deep relationship with this person, then it could be a deep wound. But I guess the relationship doesn't have to be that deep for still to be a wound, because it might bring up earlier emotional injuries that you have experienced and you might not even realize it. But the thing is, the journey back is not going to be overnight, regardless if you're ready to talk about it or not talk about it. So you need to think about some of the things that are going to be involved. Are you ready to go through the emotional turmoil that's going to be involved? Are you guys ready as a unit to be involved with that? Is the person that has done the betraying ready for the process that may take years, could take up to 10 years possibly? Who knows? That's just a number. But just so you know, it could take a long time to kind of get over these things, streak of conversations that are happening over and over again. Are you going to be patient enough to open a window of intimacy between you and your partner? These things can be done, but you have to go in with a certain attitude, an attitude of goodwill that has to be on both sides. So that means that, okay, it happens.
Oh, it ain't going to be no goodwill. Oh, okay. You better find another term, Dr. Chapman. You better find another term, because there is no goodwill after you've been betrayed. They've looked you in your face and lied. There is no, what is good? Goodwill is a movie.
I know people are ready to say that, and I definitely can understand that as someone who's been cheated on. But if you want this relationship to work, goodwill is going to have to be a part of it. One of the things that could be, that's a deterrent to it, is not necessarily talking about it. It's attacking each other about it. So you would have to.
I like that perspective. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you have to formulate some goodwill. And that's going to involve still having the hard conversations, but goodwill would look like this. I ask you a question about whatever happened. I'm going to listen to your answer and try to regulate my own emotions. I'm not going to attack you as you tell me and say, like, see, that's why you ain't no good, because you did this to me your day. Okay, thank you for being honest and telling me what I need to know about that.
It goes back to, that makes me think of something that I say all the time. And I try to live my life like this. When I said before, never ask why, always ask what and how. You might not ever know why things happen in the world. But when something happens, I can ask myself, because I can fix what and how. What just happened and how did it happen? And that seems like a more problem-solving approach to take to relationships. Do couples need, because I still feel like there is no goodwill. I don't know what that is. You can keep that over there in sunny California, partner. There's no goodwill when someone gets cheated on. But does it matter if couples have something to fight for? If they have a tangible reason to continue this relationship other than love. We got kids. We got a house. We've been married. We got time. Our families know each other. Like, does it matter, like, in a situation like that, that I am hurt, I am scarred, I am bruised, you know, the thing that makes me want to fight or makes the person want to fight is that there is this thing that is worth preserving that is larger than us, because I might not, at this point, I don't feel like you're worth preserving because you've hurt me. Is it good to have a thing, or does that thing actually make people stay in bad situations that they shouldn't stay in?
Then again, you like to hit me with the complicated questions with shortage of time, and now I'm realizing I could probably talk about this for a whole nother hour. But okay, here's what I would say to that. It's complicated. Okay. I think when I see couples, and this is not just ones that have had affairs, I've seen couples that have been together for long periods of time and maybe are not married, but seem to be staying together because of the time and because of the relationships they build with each other's family and all those things. And I don't think that's a good reason to stay together. But that doesn't necessarily mean love has to be the only reason to stay together, because love is not enough. We know that. But there have to be some things about this person and this relationship. Now, that could include the rest of the package, the family, the kids, the house, all those things. But those should be all like lights on the Christmas tree. So maybe you're not liking the Christmas tree too much right now because you don't like the person. But are there things on that tree besides the lights, the outskirts, that you appreciate and find value in, even though you can't love that person? You probably still love them. Even though you're angry at this person right now, those are the type of questions that you have to ask. Are those things gonna still shine through after a period of time? Because the reality is, if you put the work in, couples can actually increase their intimacy after an affair, particularly if one of the reasons that the affair exists is because they were vulnerable in that department. Hmm.
Should people expect to get cheated on? Yes or no? Should people statistically speaking, should people expect to get cheated on?
Okay, I'm not going to limit to just a yes or no, but this is what I would say, right? Okay, now, I think the thought is, and it's unfortunate, right? For anybody who's ever been cheated on, I'm pretty sure you've heard some version of this. Oh, well, yeah, it's probably when someone talks to you about it, they like talk to you basically like there's something wrong with the relationship, which there might be vulnerabilities, but the reality is, Big Booty Judy is around, and you know Jerry is out there too, and there's lots of moments of vulnerability when you have a child, when they go into their teens, when they transition out of the house, when you're newly married.
That's interesting. You're naming all of these developmental transitions that they create. So developmental transitions create weak spot. I don't know, for a lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Spots of vulnerability. So what do people need to do to make sure that their relationships are solid when their lives are transitioning, to make sure that these things don't happen? And maybe it's, you know, that's a very good point. Somebody's going off to school. Somebody's getting another job. Somebody's stressed out because of the job. Like, moments of transition in our lives create these soft spots or these vulnerability spots. Like, what are the things to do to make... Well, probably one is the first thing is identifying that we're in a vulnerable position. We're not living in the same city.
Listen, most people don't recognize their vulnerability. They say, oh, we're in love, which they probably are. That doesn't mean you're not vulnerable.
Yeah. And that remember, we talked about this the other week. That's people's problems, is they believe they're special. And you better believe it can happen to you. Because when you believe that trauma and tragedy can happen to you, you prepare differently. You know, like we said, relationships are like cars. You change your oil because you know people who haven't changed their oil, their motors have blown up. So you better believe that it can happen to you, no matter how much you love. That fallacy that we're special is probably the beginning of the end for most relationships, when people start to believe that they're different. Yeah. That is an, and God, and maybe we need to, because I want to, we're up on time now, but I think that's important, an important point that we at least need to touch on at least for 5 or 10 minutes in the beginning of the next show before we move on to something else. This idea of these soft spots or vulnerable spots in these transitions in life, you know, and like, what do couples need to do? And the most important thing, as you said, is identify that we're in a transition. But help, and we probably, and I'm saying we need to talk about it at least for a minute to at least help people know what a transition is. Getting a new job, somebody moving, the kids moving out, things that play an important part in other parts and pieces of your identity, where you have to redefine parts and pieces of your identity, or other parts of your pieces of your identity are either growing or dying or fading out or fading away or changing right. in some way.
In addition to that, we could talk in those first few minutes about what are the other vulnerabilities, because those aren't the only ones.
Yeah, good deal, good deal. We are, I'm sorry for those who are listening, but we are up on time. Again, as we always say, we thank you. We thank those who continue to listen, who continue to support us, who continue to go to Mahogany Love and Light. MahoganyLoveandLight.podbean.com is, you know, when we're done, that's where we upload the shows for you to listen to as well. If you've missed the show or you want to listen to a show over again, to formulate questions to send us, again, if you'd like to send us questions, comments, or suggestions, b2bpsych@gmail.com, b2bpsych@gmail.com. Again, we always like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL 88.1 FM for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, relationship issues, community issues, and everything else there in between. This is Keelan Hinton, and as I always say, you know, life is full of, graveyards are full of regret and potential. You know, when you die, make sure you take nothing with you. Make sure that you are loving as hard as you can love. Make sure the people in your life that you love, they know it. And make sure that you are chasing your dreams and doing something that sets your soul on fire. And as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out.
Okay, so I was trying to think about what to leave you with today. I think we talked about a number of different things. Maybe we'll get into some vulnerabilities next time. I guess I would want to speak to the person who has been cheated on and the person that, and or the couple that wants to try to work through this. First, I would say, if you've been cheated on, there are things that you can look at in the relationship and consider it maybe part of the dynamic of the relationship to explore. I don't think it's necessarily going to be too helpful for you to just blame yourself on the situation. You can look back, reflect, and see, you know, what you could change, how you could influence the dynamic, and that may be helpful. If you do decide, you and your partner, that you want to make this relationship work, relationships can work after infidelity. And it's just going to take a number of things. One, do you have the ability to have a goodwill? Now, goodwill does not mean that you're not going to have some rough conversations about what happened, how it went down. It means that when you have those conversations, you're not going to be attacking the person. You're going to be asking the questions. You're not going to be setting truth traps. A truth trap is that you have information and you're trying to see if they're going to lie to you. The best way to go about that when you have questions that you want to know the answer to is just start out with the goal. This is the goal of my question. This is what I know. And then ask your question. Put all your cards on the table. I know some may disagree with that, but if you're trying to do something in goodwill, then that means you want to be transparent. It's not about get them or got them, because eventually you want to be on the same team. If you want to be on the same team, being on the same team begins with goodwill. If you happen to be the one who has committed the affair, then part of being on that goodwill is going to have to, you're going to have to let your partner open that window of intimacy with you around this affair. So in the book, Not Just Friends by Shirley Glass, she talks about this idea of windows and walls. Windows, you can think about that as your opportunity to build intimacy between you and your partner. When you have an affair, you close the window between you and your partner, you put a wall between you and your partner, and you open the window between you and the other person. This also applies to other things like alcohol, other things like that. So when you start talking about this affair and you've ended the affair, which obviously is gonna be important, then you have an opportunity to open that window back up and build the wall around the relationship. That's what you're gonna need to do to have a solid relationship again. It can happen, it may take time and grace. You'll have to be patient, but anything worth having is worth working for. All right, peace and love. We'll see you all, talk to you all next week.
told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man.
Heights sky.